Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 457.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week's episode is a little different from our usual. I have a guest who is not a therapist, but someone who is talking about therapy and has written a beautiful graphic novel about therapy and their experience. My guest today is Sacha Mardu. Sacha Mardu is a British cartoonist and graphic novelist who now makes a home in St. Louis, Missouri. Her graphic memoir, Past Tense, Facing Family Secrets and Finding Myself in Therapy, is an account of her emotional healing journey using IFS therapy. If you have ever seen Sacha's comics on social media, they brilliantly and poignantly depict her process of healing after a very challenging experience during childhood with many twists and turns and using IFS therapy. And she really, it's hard to put into words how beautifully she's able to use illustration to describe her experience of doing IFS therapy parts work, where the exploration that she did with her therapist helped her to make sense out of the abusive dynamics and the secrecy which impacted her family and herself directly. And I think this is an incredible resource for people who don't know what happens in therapy, don't understand what a therapeutic process could look like, or don't understand how what might seem like, yeah, I know my childhood was hard or difficult, or there were some tough moments, but I'm okay now, yet we are plagued by repeated bouts of depression or ongoing anxiety or relation difficulties, trust issues, self-loathing, perfectionism, substance misuse, eating disorders. There's so many ways that a difficult childhood, which maybe you look around and say, well, everybody I know had a similar difficult childhood. That doesn't mean that it wasn't potentially traumatic for you. And I think in a really beautifully non-pathologizing and compassionate way, Sacha really illustrates, as her cartoonist work indicates, what that healing process really looks like and feels like. And like I said, it's pretty hard to put it into words for me because there's a visceral reaction that comes when I'm looking at her book. And if you watch our interview on YouTube, you'll see me holding up some pages from the book, which is out now, and you can get a sense for yourself about what it looks like. And you'll hear from her in this conversation why she wrote this, what the journey was like for her, and how she got started in therapy and where she is now. So I hope you will enjoy this. And if you know someone who might want to begin their healing journey, but they're afraid to get started, or they don't know what it would be like, or they think it's going to, they have a certain notion about what therapy is going to look like that is intimidating for them, this interview and Satya's book could really be beneficial to kind of demystifying the process and hopefully normalizing the healing journey and just how much transformation is possible. So let's get into it. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm really excited to be speaking to someone whose work I've followed for a long time, Satya Mardu. Satya, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Oh, thank you, Laura. You've had some amazing guests on your show, so I'm thrilled to be one of them.
Yes, you're the latest amazing guest, so I'm so grateful. And I really have been following your work for a long time on social media, at least, like, I don't know, feels like at least 5 years. I don't know how long you've been.
2019 is when I started making therapy comics online. So yeah, right from the beginning.
Great. That makes sense. Yeah. And that's what caught my attention, is that you were doing these therapy comics where you're illustrating your own, or I'll let you tell about it. Let me just say this. Let's start off by you telling our audience a little more about who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into talking about your book.
So I'm a British cartoonist from Manchester, England, originally, and I moved to America in 2005. I live in St. Louis with my cartoonist husband, Ted May, and I started going to therapy in 2017, and I started making secret sketchbook comics about the therapy process. And a couple of years later, when therapy had worked its magic and I was feeling so much better, I started kind of very tentatively sharing the therapy comics I've been making for myself with the world. And what has ended up happening is it's been turned into a book, which is out October the 15th from Avery, called Past Tense. That's the one.
There it is. And even the cover is just, it's like so familiar. I feel like I know this character from seeing these comics, and I've shared them so many times, just because even if it's a clip, it's kind of like a, you know, maybe 5 or 6 panels, a part of a piece of a experience. They're just so resonant and evocative of emotion. I'm getting teary-eyed even thinking about it. Like, it's just so rich what we can experience from a visual depiction with the descriptions of your experience compared to reading clinical jargon, even when it's written to be understandable by a general public audience, it's really heady. There's something about bringing together, you know, as we know from the therapy research, that how we heal trauma is through bottom up work, and that's what art, expressive arts, taps into. So
I really love that. It reminds me of what Brené Brown said about how do you bring all this social emotional learning like down into the body. And she said it's through creativity. It brings the heart online and it makes it real, you know. And I really found that when I was drawing these little sketchbook doodles and comics for myself after my therapy session. It was really helping me learn all the new things I was learning in therapy and kind of take them on, you know. And I'm so happy to hear that they connect with the reader as well. It speaks to me how comics, they're such a unique art form. You know, you've got the words and the pictures together. And I think as children, we learn to read pictures before we learn to read words. And I think something about comics taps into that because we're reading an image and we're also reading the words. And comics are really able to sort of bring the inside out. I can say what's happening inside me and show what's happening inside me, and also include like the subtext and the bigger picture. And so I'm really happy to hear they connect that way because they've certainly transformed my life.
Yeah, let's talk about that. How did making your sketchbook comics help you? And you just talked about it a little bit, but how did it help you integrate the information that was being shared from your therapist and your IFS work into your life?
So part of it is that I'm from Manchester, and so I don't drive. I never learned to drive. And so when I started going to therapy in 2017, I would use public transport. And so I would get the Metrolink back from my therapist's office to my house. And it gave me like half an hour to sit and actually draw in my sketchbook, everything that just happened in therapy. So it was a way of recording, you know, what I was going through for myself. It was a way of being kind of thrifty because I wanted to get all my money's worth out of therapy. It's an expensive process, you know. And when I started using IFS therapy, suddenly the little talking heads that I've been drawing of me, my therapist, and the word balloons, it had this whole other dimension, because when you draw parts of yourself, you know, there's a whole lot more going on in a picture. And so just as IFS really kind of made therapy accelerate and expand for me and really accelerated my healing, so like on the visual page as well, it's like the comics I was drawing for myself got so much more interesting when I could draw all the parts of me. So, you know, it's something I really recommend people try. And obviously there was a book, I don't know if you're familiar with, by Tom Holmes called Parts Work, An Illustrated Guide to Your Inner Life. And I'd actually, that was actually my introduction to IFS. And I found this book like through the library I work in. And when I read it, it resonated immediately. And I went back to my therapist and said, hey, you know, that IFS you mentioned that I dismissed and didn't want to do, I want to do it now, you know, so...
Wow.
It was really the fact that there was this way to draw my parts is what, you know, really kind of like brought IFS back into clarity for me as a modality I was willing to try.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, I haven't finished this book yet, but I'm just going to like turn to a random page and show. I just want people to be able to sort of see it as we're talking, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is actually, there's a chapter later in the book called Drawn Out where I actually talk about the whole process of drawing these comics for myself and wanting to share them with the world because I was feeling so much better. You know, I felt that what I was learning in therapy should be common knowledge. You know, I feel like it should be out there and people should understand how trauma can affect an individual and like also your family legacy. And I wanted to kind of include that too. And so yeah, thank you, Laura.
Yeah. Well, thank you. My goodness. I don't see that part coming right to me, but here's just a part that's about legacy. Just to kind of show like these watercolors, you know, there's images, there's words.
And it's all full color as well. I feel like the story is very dark in places. You know, I'm talking about historical trauma in my family and also like the old traumas that I kind of went through and also witnessed in my family growing up. And so the fact that the colors are vibrant and bright, I feel like it stops the whole thing from being too depressing. You know, there's still a lot of like life and optimism there. So I was really, really, really pleased that my publisher wanted to do a full color version because it's not, you know, it wasn't the cheapest option for them in terms of book production. So
this feels like something really important. I mean, to me, I don't know the book you mentioned, Thomas Holmes.
Tom Holmes, yeah.
Tom Holmes. I'm definitely going to check that out too. But to me, as I told you before we started recording, when I heard you had a book, I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, maybe I can interview her about it. And then as I said to you, I imagine like a zine, you know, like a little thin book or a graphic novel. That's kind of what I thought of. But I kind of expected it would be a book with a lot of words and some pictures. And it's all, you know, it's all the comics. And
it's
that's just
100%
so,
comics. Yeah, and also, I mean, as somebody
awesome.
who followed my webcomics. Obviously, in my webcomics, so I was very limited by space. You know, it would often be like 10-panel comics. And it would just be like a vignette of something that happened in therapy or something that I understood in a new way and was trying to show that in a very short story. And doing this book was a real opportunity to go back to the start and say, like, how I came to be in therapy, like, what was going on in my life that made me think, I really need to talk to somebody. And so I would go back and show the process from the beginning to the end. And I show how it's a book in three parts and each part represents like a year of therapy. So it was like a 3-year journey. And I really show the shifts and the changes and the IFS. And I also show switching up my therapists as well. I kind of changed therapists about 2/3 of the way through the book and like start working with a female practitioner. And I hope that I'm kind of like demonstrating that all these things are possible, because for me, therapy was just this big experiment. Once I realized that it had something to offer me, And I got totally on board with it. I began using myself as sort of an experiment in a way. It's like, okay, well, let's see what we can do with this. And I would find things that triggered me. There's, you know, the very famous book by Sylvain de Kolk's, The Body Keeps the Score. I remember reading that while I was in therapy, and I got really triggered by it. And I had a conversation with my therapist at the time who said, you know, Sasha, that's a fantastic book. And it's also maybe not the best thing for someone immersed in their own healing, because it's a traumatizing book. It's got trauma case studies in it. And so I actually kind of like read that book and triggered myself again just to see, oh, it gave me like, you know, feeling that anxiety again. It kind of triggered acne, which is like one of my anxiety symptoms that I really suffered with back then. And so it was really just using myself as an experiment, because I felt so grounded by the therapist help I had. I began to kind of like trust the process and really be like, okay, what would happen if, you know, I kind of like drew this? What would happen if I got big sheets of paper and really let my inner child like go to with wax crayons? I just got really invested in my own healing. And I think the fact that I was so connected to creativity and I was such in a good position with my therapist, it felt like a safe space to do that. I'd never felt so supported before. And I really grew up in a family of origin where, you know, you have to kind of like figure your own problems out. Like, you don't bother people with that kind of stuff. But once I started bothering people with my problems, it was transformative. And that's really what I hope the book shows, that it is a process. It takes time, but there are many different modalities. And, you know, you can really kind of like support yourself while you're healing. And there's a lot of research you can do, you know. There's a page in the book where I talk about all the books, all the therapy books I read, because I just wanted to know more and more and more. And it really felt like the ground was firming up beneath my feet. And again, it's like, why doesn't everybody know this? Why am I learning this in my 40s? You know, I feel like therapy has such wisdom and, you know, sort of a way of leading with compassion to offer the world. So really, another aspect of this book is that it's a love letter to therapy. I wanted to say thank you to this wonderful profession that happens in secret behind closed doors. And, you know, I'm kind of like turned that inside out. And it's like, okay, I'm going to share my story, but I'm also going to show what therapy can do, you know, and what good therapy can do.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I just love that. I was going to ask you, I was thinking while you were talking, you said you're from Manchester. I wondered, I know Manchester's kind of like a industrial city, am I right?
That's right.
And it's in the north, like a hearty people. Right?
Yeah, very, very much so. We have a saying that I mentioned in the book. My therapist asked me like what Manchester was like, and I said we have a saying that it's grim up north, you know, and that we're kind of like tough people. And part of that toughness is, you know, you don't ask for help. One of the things I talk about is that my grandmother lived in a part of Manchester called Trafford Park, which was heavily bombed during World War II. She had like high explosive bombs like falling 10 minutes from her house. And, you know, the propaganda aimed at women at that time, who were the main population of Manchester back then, because it was like women and older men who were kind of holding the fort while the men were off fighting, right? All the propaganda aimed at women was like, keep calm and carry on, you know, like be tough, at a girl, like women can do all these jobs of industry, keep quiet, you know, walls have ears. And I think my grandmother really internalized a lot of that, because she, you know, she never waxed lyrical about the war. She never spoke about the Blitz spirit or the good times she had. She had a terrible time during World War II. You know, she lost people, but she kind of came through it with this stoicism, you know, like she wouldn't complain, she wouldn't ask for help. And yet I know my grandmother like suffered from anxiety too. She called it her nerves back then. And I know many servicemen who did come back also had PTSD, but it wasn't talked about because it wasn't known. We didn't have a name for it back then, you know. And so that's part of the family legacy of trauma that I kind of talk about in my book as well.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I didn't know that the keep calm and carry on thing, which was like all over the pillows and the bumper stickers and everything about, what, 5 to 10 years ago here?
Yeah, no, it was.
I didn't know that was from then.
It's like a war era thing. There was a ministry of propaganda, you know, just like the Nazis had a propaganda minister. So did we. But ours was aimed at keeping morale up and keeping this kind of spirit of kind of keeping the home front kind of like safe. I mean, a lot of it was to appeal to America, because like in 1941, it was like Britain was like the last country kind of like fighting, you know, and we really needed American help. And yet America was dragging its feet about joining the war. And so, yeah, I mean, it was this very much this bulldog independent spirit, which was great to kind of get us through that very difficult time. But when that becomes part of the national identity and part of the national personality, vulnerability is not seen as something to be embraced or cherished or nurtured. It's seen as weakness, you know? And in Britain, we have a culture of, we don't have a therapy culture like America does. We certainly do not, you know? I think it's changing slowly, but it's a very slow change. And yet we have so many, we have like high rates of alcoholism, you know, and high rates of depression. And it's part of the reason why it took me so long to like seek a therapist. You know, I think during my 20s, I could have really benefited from therapy, but it was just not on my radar, not something I would have ever considered. You know, it would have made me feel like broken and I didn't want to feel broken.
I know what you mean, because I know it from my own experience, that not wanting to feel broken.
Yeah.
Thank you again for sharing that. And I was going to ask you sort of about like what the attitude about therapy would be in Manchester when, you know, when you were growing up, you kind of already talked about it, but how did you think of therapy when you found out that you wanted to go to therapy or like you needed to go to therapy? How did you feel about the idea of therapy?
So I mentioned acne. So one of the first symptoms of anxiety that made me take action and get help was anxiety, because I feel like I'd been hiding my anxiety for a long time. But all of a sudden, when anxiety is showing as a symptom on my face and I couldn't hide it anymore, I was like, right, I need to sort of get treatment. So I went to see an acupuncturist here in St. Louis, and he helped me a lot, and he really helped me identify that anxiety and stress were what were causing these acne breakouts. And it was him who recommended like therapy. And my first response was like, oh my God, he thinks I need therapy. It was like one of shame. Like, I don't want him to think that about me. And then he softened it by saying, I'm speaking from personal experience. And he recommended a really good therapist. And that's what made me think, well, okay. He also told me, like, we've gone as far as we can with acupuncture. This is something else. This is an emotional block. So I'm really grateful to his wisdom and his encouragement, because I don't think without that I would have thought, you know, I need therapy. I should also mention that I have a graphic novel, my first book. It was a graphic novel that was released in two parts, so 2015 and 2019, and it's called Sky in Stereo. And it's a fictional, like, graphic novel, but it does deal with a real event that happened when I was 17. So when I was 17, I had a breakdown. I took LSD and didn't sleep for a week and ended up being hospitalized. And so I was put in a psychiatric hospital for the summer when I was 17. And that had really given me a dire impression of mental health services. I kind of equated therapy with psychiatry. And that's like, I'm never going there again. I'm never going to be that 17-year-old who has no agency and, you know, and is kind of stuffed full of pills. So that was my impression of what therapy would be like. And of course, it was not. Therapy and psychiatry are not the same, like, discipline. You know, therapy is all these other things, and it's not necessarily like giving like somebody, you know, medication. And so yeah, it was a real process of education and like re-educating myself what therapy was. And when I realized that it was more than just talk therapy and you can use these other modalities like internal family systems, that's when I really kind of began to open up and kind of take charge. You know, I think one of the things I love so much about IFS therapy is that it returns you to yourself. Like, the therapist is not in charge, you know, the therapist is not building a version of you that's strong and resilient. It's like you're finding it within yourself. And so for me, it just felt so intuitive and natural, and it just honored me, you know, like it honored the person that I was and everything I'd come through. And suddenly I went from being this critical inner voice that would be me to a more compassionate version of myself who could see everything I've been through and was just tender towards myself. Like, you know, what a change, what a turnaround. And obviously once I got good at turning that compassionate inner self on, it made such a difference in my life, because, you know, my family could also see that too. They could see this softer, more relaxed version of me. I think what Bessel van der Kolk says about trauma is that it really does splinter a person, and it cuts you off from, you know, it can cut you off from the bad feelings, but can also cut you off from kind of like joy and connection to others. And when I found this big self in IFS therapy, it's like suddenly like joy and connection were just so much more available to me in my everyday life. So that's something I also hope that people get from reading my story in this book.
Yes. Oh, wow. I mean, It comes through in the way you're speaking about it, the way that therapy, it sounds like the therapy that you had really was a holding space for you to be able to explore your inner world and get to know who you are without the adaptations of, you know, trying everything we have to do to keep calm and carry on and be stoic mm-hmm. and not express our feelings, not show vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ways we armor.
And it reminds me of something that is included in the book. When I switched therapists, my therapist said to me, you know, as you go on this journey of like meeting your inner demons and meeting your kind of like mistakes and naiveties and vulnerabilities, like, please also know that there are gems there and you can look for them. And what a beautiful thing to say, you know, like, because I did, I found like gems inside myself, like things that are worth sharing, things that you can feel, you know, proud about. And it really being on that process where I've learned so much like self-compassion and care for myself, I think it's really key that I've been able to share this work. I needed that kind of like that inner confidence, and I needed all my parts to be on board. The very first therapy comic I shared, I had like a shame backlash after pressing, like I hit send and just had this huge shame backlash. And it was like a part of me saying, who do you think you are? Who wants this from you? Like, who's asking you to share this stuff, trashing your family? Nobody's asking for that. And so I had to really sit with that shame part of myself. And once I sat with it enough for the shame to kind of like simmer down a little bit, there was another part of me there. And it was like a teenage part who was kind of handing me the pen saying, I want to hear this. Like, I've never heard my story told like that. And it was such a powerful thing. And I made a comic about that too. So my parts have really kind of like helped me write this story. You know, they've kind of been on board too. And it's an unusual thing to do, you know, to kind of blow the lid on your own therapy and to sort of tell these stories that do involve like my kind of disrupted family. But I found a way to navigate it, you know, and therapy helped with that too. I had to figure out how to sort of tell this story in a way that didn't piss my family off too much or, you know, kind of alienate people. And so, yeah, therapy kind of helped with that as well. I got counseling around it. And it was something I had to navigate, but I think I did navigate it. So far, my family is still talking to me, so I got to do something right.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I think one of the things that, whether consciously or unconsciously, prevents us from seeking healing is the fear of disloyalty to our family.
Yeah.
And that if we expose even to ourselves the secrets, which, you know, Facing Family Secrets and Finding Myself in Therapy is the subtitle of your book, past tense, that draw to protect those secrets is so powerful and really has like a chilling effect on being able to connect with our own truth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember very early on in therapy when I was starting to kind of tell these stories to my therapist and kind of like, it felt like I was opening boxes. And actually, I remember having dreams at the time where I was like digging on a beach and I started digging up this toxic waste and I kept finding more and more and more of it, thinking like, why did I even start digging? What a mistake. Or like opening boxes and finding like more and more boxes inside. And there was a point in therapy when I was like, this was a mistake. Like, I shouldn't have like started like uncovering all this, you know, all this kind of like this dark history. But there comes a point, there is another side, you know. And so I think therapy gets really, really hard before it gets good. But I hope the book like reassures people that there is another side to this, and there is a self to sort of be rediscovered. And I think we have to kind of clear out the closet in a way. We have to kind of like bring those skeletons out and kind of like honor them and name them. Because what I found was not, I found mistakes that my family members had made, like going back to my grandmother's treatment of my mother. You know, these are kind of like mistakes that left a big imprint on my mother. And then they got kicked down the road for me to kind of address and heal. But what I found with that was not recrimination or revenge. It was actually kind of like love and just like being able to honor their stories. I'd never thought before I went to therapy just what it would be like for my grandmother to have those bombs falling near your house, to have like loved ones that never came home. Just the amount of loss. It's like I knew these stories, but I didn't know them in my heart. And for the first time, I kind of like cried over them and really kind of felt the grief. And like being able to grieve things that happened 70 years ago is not something I expected to find in therapy, but how cleansing it was, you know, it kind of purified my memories of my family. You know, my grandmother like went to her grave not talking to my mum. And that's a hard one, you know, like my mum was ostracized for her religion, basically. But having been able to sort of like find that healing and that reparation, even when someone has passed, you know, by being able to sort of make the time and sit with their stories. And it's my story. I mean, my grandmother is gone, but her DNA is in me. I look in the mirror and as I'm aging, I'm becoming more and more her. I look at my hands and they're her hands, you know. So on a very like on a protein level, I'm her. But I know that those stories are like part of my story as well. And so as one of my therapists said, it's like I have a right to my own story and I have a right to heal. And it really was important for me to sort of like see how far this went back, you know, in my family's memory. And despite the darkness, I also found those gems when it came to my family too, you know.
You know what I don't miss at all? That vicious week before my period when I felt like crawling out of my skin. Skin that was breaking out, cravings, ugh. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Estro Control is a formula developed by Happy Mammoth, a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. The way Estro Control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, women may start having PMS, breaking out, getting cravings, and feeling low all of a sudden. Estro Control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can turn into a beast. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. We love Sunbasket recipes we receive, like salmon farro bowls with spinach and green goddess dressing. Tonight, we're having shrimp tikka masala. Sunbasket is convenient. Everything is pre-measured, pre-portioned, and easy to prepare. Plus, Sunbasket meals are dietitian approved, so you can feel confident that you're putting a healthy and delicious meal on the table. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home. Try it for 4 weeks and see how Sunbasket can change the way you feel. It's easy to customize recipes to meet your exact needs. Sunbasket empowers you to eat your best your way. They even have pre-made meals, delicious single-serving meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes with zero prep or mess. Go to sunbasket.com/therapychat today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/therapychat to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night, oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months. Right. It puts it all into context. Your grandmother wasn't a horrible monster who mistreated your mother, who was a horrible monster and mistreated you. They're people who reacted to their circumstances the way they knew to. And not to say that behaviors can't be very harmful and abusive and wrong. And I don't know enough about your story because I haven't read all of it. I know more so far about, mainly what I know is about your dad and that part of the story. But I always want to be clear that nobody owes it to abusive family members to forgive them or to have compassion for them. When you've been abused, you have the right to feel what you feel about that. But also, like, we don't go through life not hurting other people through our unconscious actions, every one, no matter how much we try to be a good person, we do things that cause harm to others. So it's not about never causing any harm. It's about what do you do when you realize that you've caused harm? Do you avoid facing it and try to hide from it and deny accountability? Or do you take the brave action of looking at your behavior and accepting accountability and attempting to repair?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the wonderful gifts that IFS therapy has given me. It gives you so much consciousness and awareness so that when a part of you gets activated, I was suddenly able to recognize, oh, I'm in a part right now. Like a part of me is feeling like very activated or triggered. And rather than kind of like lash out at somebody else and maybe get angry or get defensive or storm off, instead, I'm able to just like take a few minutes and just tell that part of me, it's like, it's okay. I've got that. I can handle this situation. You don't need to be the one that has this conversation for me. I can handle it. You know, when you can get that activated part of you to step back and a bit more self comes online, it really does change the world around you, you know, by changing yourself, by changing who's speaking at that moment. You know, is it a reactive part of me or is it me? Is it Sasha? So I'm so grateful to therapy for giving me that distinction and that consciousness, you know.
Yes, yes. And when a part is in front and self-energy is not available enough, everything seems very black and white, you know, not in how it looks, but in what's really going on. It seems very this or that, good or bad. And when we have self-energy, we can kind of look at the whole picture and see that there
Isn't it amazing? You can see that polarity within yourself, and then you can start to recognize it in other people. And so when other people are sort of saying hateful things, you kind of recognize the sort of polarization probably within them, you know. It's kind of a remarkable level of perception that it gives you, but you have to do the work yourself first, I think, you know.
Yeah. And it is hard work. I mean, it involves, it just requires a lot of courage to open those boxes and not just put the lid back on and run away. I mean, that's you know, and that's what I think people can be very fearful of when considering going to therapy, that it'll be so hard, it'll be so painful, it'll feel so out of control. I don't want to unearth all of that. I think as a trauma therapist, it's hard to help people understand that you already went through this. You went through what's in that box happened already. And it was, you got through it and you're here now feeling it, you know, will do in a way. Now, this isn't necessarily an IFS thing, but the way that I practice as a trauma therapist and encourage people to practice with trauma therapy, which IFS isn't necessarily trauma therapy, but it can be used with trauma. It's like you titrate it. You do it a little bit, like in amounts that you can tolerate before going deeper. So it doesn't have to be so overwhelming. And I think that's sort of what you can do with, you know, when you ask a part, I know you're here. Yes, I can handle this. Can you step aside, you know?
Yeah. That's such an interesting perspective as a trauma therapist, and it speaks to some of my experiences from therapy too. I very clearly remember in between therapy sessions getting incredibly triggered and feeling just like I am on fire with like anger and shame right now, and it feels terrible. I don't want to feel this way. And then kind of recognizing it's like, okay, I'm feeling this. I mean, whether I like it or not, it's right here. And I started to kind of like build capacity to sort of be with those bad feelings. And it didn't happen all at once. Like you said, it was little by little, I got stronger and more able to kind of deal with those bad feelings. And there was an incredible lesson there, which is that as bad as anxiety, fear, shame, you name it, as bad as it feels, it can't actually hurt you. Like you said, you've already been through it. And it's like, I'm feeling really, really bad and I can bear it. You know, I can cope with it. It's not actually going to hurt me or floor me, even though it feels like it wants to knock me off my feet. And so, that was a very powerful lesson from therapy, that bad feelings, they're just feelings and they will pass, you know, and you can kind of like build capacity and meet it and not run away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this is so inspiring.
Thank you. I'm getting all the feels too, Laura.
I want to ask you, there's something that I'm really fascinated about that ties into our conversation, which is creativity and the creative process. And more for myself, as I try to develop a better relationship with my creative self, or my a creative life to really like live into that more and not suppress that part of myself. It seems like the, you know, the most hidden parts of me are kind of what are holding that access to the creative stuff. It just seems like it's in the same space. And I was wondering how your creative life and your life as an artist was changed through this process of making this, all these comics and making this book.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I've been a cartoonist for 20 years. And so I'd made books before I came to therapy and was making comics before I started making therapy comics. And so for me, I already had an established creative practice and I kept a sketchbook and I always tuned my life into how can I squeeze some drawing out today? You know, that's very much a priority for me because it's such a wonderful thing to do for yourself. Like it's when you get in a state of flow and creativity, you know, I think Martha Beck says you can't be in a state of creativity and a state of worry at the same time. The two things can't exist in your brain at the same time. And so when I'm drawing, you know, I'm not anxious. I'm feeling okay. And so really, when I started making comics about therapy, I mean, it was the best of both worlds. I mean, I'm already engaging with my creativity, which is, you know, in self-therapy, there are the 8 C's. And you know you're in self when one of these C's is present. And so for me, creativity is one of those C's, right? And so in a way, it felt like I was cheating because I've already got access to self-energy and being creative, right? But then also charting my journey and sort of seeing how far I came, and I could like read some old therapy comics and it's like, oh, I remember going through that, and that part of me doesn't show up anymore. I mean, it's completely healed. So I was really making like a visual map for myself as well. And then obviously there's the career aspect of it. Like I always wanted comics and being an author to be my full-time career. And until the therapy comics started happening for me, that wasn't the case. I had a part-time job in a library as well. And so making this book really allowed me to sort of quit my job and just focus on comics completely. And so it's kind of opened a door in that sense. One thing I'll say specifically about creativity, I think people think that creativity is kind of connected to being an artist, and most people would not identify as an artist. And I feel that's a huge block because creativity is the process of being creative, and being an artist is the process of making art, and usually every day. That's what makes an artist an artist. They make art every day, right? Not just sometimes. And so I know there's a lot of like fear and trepidation and, you know, I'm not good enough. All these kind of feelings kind of go into kind of creative work. And it's a real shame to me. You know, I think comics are one of the most democratic art forms because all you need is a piece of paper and a pencil, and anyone can have a go at doing it, you know. And obviously I've done it for 20 years. And so I have some skills when it comes to making comics. But it really is. I mean, everybody has access to creativity, and it may not be drawing comics like I do. Maybe it's cooking, photography, making podcasts, you know, like it could be anything. It could be crocheting, you know, but there is a way of kind of like engaging with your creativity, which I believe is just going to give you a fullness to your life. And it can be incorporated with your healing, which I'm sure you know a lot more about. I mean, I've done it personally, but I know there's the whole healing arts kind of side to it that I'm less familiar with. So,
well, yes. And thank you also for how you just explained that. That's very helpful. But I want to say, like, something that you brought up earlier in our conversation was, and you talked about that this is in the book. Am I going to be able to even put this into words? But I want to say that it's like there was something that shifted in your ability to show up or to show your work, kind of like you said something about that.
Yeah.
The therapy experience gave you that something that you were holding back before.
Yeah. I had to do work around doing the work, if that makes sense. So I had to get therapy counseling around this thing that I wanted to do, which was I had these stacks of sketchbooks full of all my little therapy bits. And it's like, I would love to share this with the world, but it mentions my aunt, my mom, my dad who was incarcerated. It mentions my stepsister, my half sister. It mentions all these people. How on earth can I put their story in my story, but how can I tell this story without including them? So that was very much something I had to talk to my therapist about. And he helped me delineate the difference between personal and private. So some things are very personal to me, and then some things are very private. And so I feel like there's certain things that I don't really share. Like now my daughter, for example, is 15. She no longer wants to be in my comics. But when she was 6, it wasn't so much of an issue, right? And so that's like one of the distinctions that I make now. But part of my process was actually like writing to and having conversations with family members. Like there is a point, like, so a conversation with my mom that I have in the book is my mom is the victim of sexual assault when she was a teenager. And she told me this years before, and it was something I brought to therapy and was kind of numb about, you know? And the more and more I kind of engaged with my own therapy, the more the trauma that had happened to my mom became like very real and alive for me. And I knew it's something that I had to tell if I was going to write this book. And so I had a conversation with my mom and said, look, there is a point where my story becomes your story, and I don't know if I'm allowed to tell it. And she gave me permission. She trusted me, which was huge of her, you know? Yeah. And so it goes back to what I was saying, that when you kind of engage your creativity, especially when it comes to telling family stories like this, you know, you have to remind yourself what you're looking for is harmony, not discord. You know, you're looking for healing, not revenge or retribution. And I'd kind of made that apparent to my mom through the person I am with her now. You know, the fact that I can kind of hold space for her, and when she does things that trigger me, I can notice when I'm triggered rather than just getting mad at her, you know? And so I'm not perfect, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. You know, we used to really butt heads a lot, and now there's a lot of sort of gentleness and space. And so the fact that, you know, I was able to have these conversations with her kind of opened up the path to making a story and including her in it. And the same with my half sister. That said, there are also people in my family, like I mentioned, my father was, he was a sex offender, and he went to prison. You know, he kind of like sexually abused my stepsister. And so that was something that I had to include in the story as well, because this was a really big factor in my therapy. Like, how do I deal with somebody like this? How I'm completely estranged from my father. And yeah, there was a lot of like shame I carried around him. You know, sometimes you have to sort of tell that story, and it's like, okay, well, let the chips fall where they may. It's like, you know, I don't know where he is. I don't see him. Like, obviously approaching him and asking him if I could include him in this story was not an option. So I just had to disguise him the best I could. And so there are ways to do things. There is no set formula to success, but, you know, every kind of like family is different and every path is different. And obviously for a lot of people listening to this, if you do want to, you know, start writing your own family story, or just remember, like, you don't have to be completely public about it like I was. I mean, this is, you can like write it for yourself, you know? And that's what I was doing for the first 2 years of therapy. I was writing for myself, and I never dreamed that I would want to share this stuff. In my very first therapy session, my therapist said to me, what you've just told me about your family, that should be your story too. And I was like, you're crazy. I will never write that book. And here I am, I've written that book. But I found that I opened a door that I wanted to kind of keep going through. And so kind of a special case in a way, but I just hope that telling this story helps other people, because when I lived through my childhood, I felt like the biggest freak on earth. Like, nobody else has a story like this. Nobody else has a family like mine. And what I've learned through sharing this story is like, my story is far from unique. Like, there's so many families like mine out there. There are so many people holding shame and, yeah, like very, very difficult, challenging stuff that was challenging for a kid to deal with. And, you know, I was a kid trying to deal with that stuff back then. So the adult me is able to sort of tell that story for that kid part of me, and also to try and honor the people that I'm writing about, you know, because I do care about them. I never wanted to throw anyone under the bus, and I was having that key, like, this is about harmony and about healing. And I hope that comes across in the narrative.
I can only speak about the parts that I've read, but it's, to me, it's written in a very compassionate tone and style. And it just feels so, I mean, familiar in a lot of ways, for one thing.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, as a trauma therapist, you've heard stories like this before, right?
Yeah, and also my own story. It's not exactly the same, but reading this, I'm considering other things about myself and my family's history and the secrets. And when you see yourself in someone else's story, it helps you to maybe take in aspects of what you went through, or what you know that other people in your family have gone through, or secrets that weren't expressed, never told. So it's like a more of a feeling of something's wrong here, or, you know, just like a sense. So it gives, kind of brings it into light and gives a little distance what we would call in therapy, externalizing it to make it a little easier to go, oh, wow, yeah, I know what she means here.
Yeah.
So again, I think that this book is going to help so many people. I would much rather see, no offense to Bessel van der Kolk, but I would much rather see people who are in a healing journey reading a book like this than The Body Keeps the Score. Although it's a great book, The Body Keeps the Score, but people grab it because it's one of the best known books out there on healing from trauma. And it teaches about CPTSD, which is really great, but it can be so triggering, and people just like get into it and they do not put it down. And then they're all activated and having nightmares and stuff, and they don't know why. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree. And my therapist pointed out it is a book written for therapists, and the audience for my book was not therapists. It was therapists and their clients, or clients and their therapists. One of the things that really guided me was that with my webcomics, I always read the comments, you know, and the comments have been so valuable and instructive and helpful. And so many of the comments have been like, I share your comics with my therapist, or my therapist shared these comics with me, and they kind of like helped us like do IFS together or something. That is incredible feedback. And so really, as I made this book, I was kind of conscious of the fact that this is a book for therapy clients and their therapists, not a book. It's not a textbook for therapists, you know, so. It's very much a narrative story. It's a memoir, you know?
It's a beautiful memoir. And I want to read as we finish up for now, I want to read what is on the cover, what Dick Schwartz, the founder of IFS Therapy, said. This is the best, most honest, and disclosive book on psychotherapy and healing that I've ever read.
I was crying when my editor sent me that, and I was just in tears. Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful endorsement.
Yeah. He's been so wonderful. And I got to meet him through making these comics. Completely had a fangirling part online, you know, when I met him. But it was wonderful. And just the response from the therapy community has been so incredible. I know you had Dr. Arielle Schwartz on your podcast. I really love her. And she kind of provided a quote for the book as well. Martha Beck was on my wish list, and she provided a quote for the book as well. So that
made me fall over. I know
Martha Beck.
I think Martha Beck was one of the first people that I realized from her book Expecting Adam.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I just realized a lot of things. It brought a shift in me that made me want to move in a different direction. I can't even put it into words.
No, I get that. I feel like therapy is kind of like the psycho end of it, and there was a spiritual end of it. And I think Martha Beck lives on that psycho-spiritual, the spiritual psycho end of it, you know?
Yeah.
And she has so many gifts to bring to it, but she is so grounded in sociology and just facts, you know, that I get so much from her work. So that was totally a falling over moment when I read her quote. Yeah.
Well, and Dr. Arielle Schwartz is another one of my very favorite teachers. So, I mean, you're in good company in what you've created, that it's resounding with so many. And I just can't wait till it comes out and I seeing you on TV and, you know.
Okay,
Oprah,
now you're activating the terrifying
manifesting.
Parts of me.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
at whatever pace that you feel comfortable.
This is great because I'm just talking to a therapist right now. I'm loving it. But yeah, TV, kidding me, no.
Oh, well, it's been so beautiful chatting with you. I'm so glad to actually have been face to face, even though we're not in real life, and voice to voice with you, and to learn more about this. And I would love to see what happens next. I'm so excited for you. I'm just really rooting for you with this.
I so appreciate it, and I feel it too. Thank you, Laura. This has been a real pleasure for me, and yeah, I hope we talk again at some point.
Yes,
maybe we will. Right?
Yay, or maybe we'll talk about this again.
That'd
I actually do have plans to I've interviewed Dick Schwartz once several years ago, but if it works out, we have a plan to do another interview soon, and maybe I'll release it right after this one by the time, because we're going to record, if all goes according to plan, in November. So let me hold up your book one more time, Sasha. So this is all the sunlight.
I love how the sunlight's falling on it. That's wonderful.
Very beautiful.
Thank you
so
much.
So where can everyone find the book when it comes out?
So the book is available anywhere you buy books, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble. Obviously, your local comic book shop is a good place as well. But yeah, anywhere you buy books, it's available. And it's also available as an ebook if you like reading on your Kindle.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I also have a website called ifscomics.com that has links to everything. And it has tons of therapy comics on it and therapy sessions that I made comics of that, you know, didn't end up in the book. And so I've got lots of comics out there. So you can also follow me on social media. I try and post every week. So
yeah, and you're on Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
What's your handle?
So on Instagram, it's Madhu_draws. And on Facebook, it's Sasha Madhu, my name, all one word.
Beautiful. I'll put links to those in the show notes too. And that's where I found you. It was originally on Facebook. So
that's great. And I love, like I said, I really love reading the comments because I have the kindest, like wonderful readers. And so the conversations that I get to have with people and the feedback that I get in real time, it really showed me. I mean, it really encouraged me to make this book because it showed me that I was on the right path and that, you know, people go through this and that I'm far from alone. And that, you know, by sharing our stories, we just kind of create so much space and just destigmatize, you know, the difficult work of having all these big human feelings. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to engage with everyone on social media. So thank you, Laura.
Beautiful. Well, Sasha, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you. It's been really special.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.